Hi, guys. Welcome into today's OBR Film Breakdown. It's going to be an interesting show. I'm your host, Jake Burns. We have to do what I hate to do every year, but I think it's a necessary task. We look at, I talk about all the time how we look at our team through orange and brown colored glasses, right? Like, optimism reigns supreme in every offseason. And why not? You know, everybody in your life, there's, to me, two types of people. There's energy givers and energy takers. I prefer to surround myself with as many energy giving type of people as I can possibly find. I think that's a great goal to have in life. There are unfortunately going to be takers. And I use that analogy for the situation of what fun is it in the offseason to be a taker? You know, to say the team's going to suck, to say this is going to go wrong, that's going to go wrong. Most of us don't do that. Most of us don't live in that world because it's a pretty boring and terrible world to be in. It's an energy draining, to tie it back, sort of scenario. So we all look at this with optimism, how our team, you ignore the negative, you ignore the things that could go wrong. And I think it's always fair. And I've tried to do this over the last 2 years. Unfortunately, last year's podcast was a little bit too accurate, but I try to take a granular look at what can go wrong. Now, last year, so much optimism, understandably, that you know, it was sort of an interesting exercise to nitpick a lot of different players. I'm not going to do that this year. There is way too much negativity right now. And I don't want to send out a podcast here where it's centered around picking apart every single player. But I do think the exercise, as we sit here and look at I think we're in the trenches of what is pretty negative. The exercise can be interesting to look at. You know, the scope of if things go wrong, which they could here, how do they go wrong? And a byproduct of that is where are we at the end of that run? So I wanted to bring on today's guest, Jared Mueller. You know, Jared at BrownsWire, he does a great job running that site. And I think Jared's a great guest for this topic because it is not a fun topic, but I think one that we can try to sort of guide our way through and talk about things with a well-rounded angle. So Jared, what's up, man? How are you?
You know, I'm doing good, Jake. It's always good to talk to you. And I love the idea of energy giver and energy taker, you know, so I think you and I as positive people probably mm-hmm. are the best to have this conversation as opposed to people who are already kind of focused on the negatives because it allows us to balance ourselves out and maybe for some of the fans balance some things out for them as well. So, you know, not always looking forward to the negatives, but, you know, we're professionals. We can do this.
Yeah, we can do it. We're going to make it happen. Like I said, last year, I picked apart the entire roster and tried to just say, here's where it could go wrong. Almost individual players. We're not going to do that here. What we're going to do is pick broader topics. So, like I said, they're currently living in the situation, in my opinion, that is the most negative situation, which is the quarterback they traded for is looking at an indefinite suspension. If it is different than an indefinite suspension, right on. But I don't see it being different than an indefinite suspension. So the worst case scenario for the Cleveland Browns organization is that Deshaun Watson missed the entire 2022 season. So that is the negative space that we are living in. So what we have to do now is look at it from offense, defense, specials. And then I have a kicker, not the actual kicker who seems to be doing quite well, but we have an extra bonus little angle too that I want to hash out a little, but offensively, I think Jared, as Jacoby takes over the reins here, the idea that they need to run the football a ton is pretty obvious. Like they need to take advantage of the stable of running backs if they keep Kareem, signs point toward them keeping him. But I'm interested in your opinion, if this offense is as bad as last year's offense, why do you think that is? And sort of if you want us to highlight a few places you think that that becomes a real situation, feel free to do so. Because I think I have a pretty clear understanding of where, in my opinion, this will go wrong. So I'm curious where if they end up being a bottom third offense in the NFL, why does that happen?
You know, I think you
we're really excluding injuries. I should say we're keeping injuries out of the fold.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a couple things that I look at. First and foremost, you know, I know obviously not everybody likes talking about analytics and EPA and, you know, all of the different PFF scores and all that kind of stuff. But we know that in general, running the football is an inefficient thing to do in the NFL today. And so even though the Browns are really, really good at something that used to be important, at some level, running the football is what defenses want a team to do. Even though the Browns do it as well as pretty much anybody in the league, maybe right behind the Baltimore Ravens when they are actually fully healthy. But But that's an inefficient way to win in the NFL. And it really severely limits what your offense is able to do. And I think when I think of Jacoby Brissett, while I think he can be good enough or good, the reality is I think of a lot of offenses, whether it's the Ohio State under JT Barrett or Mitch Trubisky, who won't throw one side of the field, or even Jimmy Garoppolo, who really can't throw the ball deep. When you have a quarterback that very clearly can only do a certain amount of things, all of a sudden the defense can just cue on everything. And so with Jacoby Brissett, with really only Amari Cooper as a proven wide receiver or a pass catching threat, besides some of the screen game stuff, all of a sudden you're looking at that 8-man box, that 7-man box that is loaded up on the run. And even though they may run some pistol and some of that kind of stuff, the defense really has a good idea of what is happening without the huge concern of Jacoby Brissett burning them if they're loading up that box. So that really is kind of number one for me. And then, to be honest, there's a part of me that still remembers Amari Cooper pre-Dallas, right? And and with the Raiders, Cooper allowed himself to get frustrated sometimes really, really easily. And so if Jacoby Brissett is throwing the ball to him and it's inaccurate, he's getting hit, passes aren't where they need to be on time, those kind of things, I do have a slight concern. Again, I'm just hearkening back to kind of some of the Raiders things I remember when he wasn't playing with really good quarterback play and the team was struggling. Is that something, you know, Amari was traded to Cleveland. He didn't decide to come here. So does he start to kind of struggle with that adjustment, with that poor quarterback play? And then all of a sudden, now your number one receiver really isn't playing to that level. So all of that kind of wraps around the fact that a limited offense in this league is problematic because you can't keep up with most NFL offenses, starting with the Cincinnati Bengals, even with the Baltimore Ravens, obviously onto Kansas City, Buffalo, and those types of teams.
Yeah, the wide receiver group stands out to me where, you know, we're going to talk a bit more about Jakeem Grant and that situation with the Achilles later, but they just, I mean, there's so many things I'm worried about here. I mean, you talked about Amari Cooper. I think it's safe to say Amari's not quite who he used to be. I still think he can be a good player, a really, really good. I should say that. He's a really, really good player. But you know, you hit the age as you hit, and you start to get to that point where you're a little disappointed in either where you're at or what's around you, like you said, with the quarterback play this year. And that stuff starts to fall off, and you start to get nervous about that, because then it goes Donovan Peoples-Jones, who I think is very fine for an esoteric role, very specified role in the league. But then it's like, okay, is David Bell going to be a separator? We don't really know. Anthony Schwartz reported to be inconsistent as possible at camp. And then it's like, who? I mean, this wide receiver group, I think there's a very realistic chance that we look back at the end of the year and we're trying to pinpoint what went wrong with the offense. And you're like, this wide receiver group was just embarrassing. And I think it's like there is a world where the Browns clearly thought that they'd have Deshaun Watson for a portion of it, and he could make up for that, and he could make things happen, and yada, yada, yada. But I'm just worried that they have completely glossed over the depth of a wide receiver room and how that impacts an offense holistically. Even if you don't have a quarterback like Watson trying to help a quarterback like Brissett. And to that point, too, you only have two real tight ends right now. That's another thing. And even that is, in and of itself, a complete philosophical change for Stefanski to be a heavier 12 personnel guy, but that depth there is a little limited too. So I'm just, the scope of pass catchers, I think we could look back at the end of the year and be like, how did they neglect this? Why couldn't they go out and get, you know, I don't know what the, Will Fuller, there's been some reported issues beyond football, not legal stuff, but just beyond football, mental health things, I think, are playing a factor. But could you go trade for Jalen Reagor? Could you go trade for Darius Slayton? Could you go trade for some of those guys out there who are fringe guys, maybe potentially like Mims in New York? Like, it just seems like, and again, there's time. They don't kick off until another month and 2 days from now. But I'm just very, very worried about that. I think the offensive line has a middle of the NFL basement. They're elite, number one offensive line ceiling. So I'm not overly concerned about that group, but the receiver stuff, we know Brissett is going to be a version of 2021 Mayfield. He's not as good as Baker when Baker's right and playing his best, but he has a chance to be better than last year's Mayfield. And even reminder, like last year's Mayfield, although rough, they were on the fringe of making the playoffs. So you don't need that much better quarterback play. But again, we lived in a reality where the Browns' top receiving threat last year, I think the team went for what? Peoples-Jones went for 500 yards, 600 yards. It was pretty ugly there too. Like repeating that though would be just such a miserable outcome. And I think if we look back on it, to me, the thing that would go horribly wrong outside of just terrible, terrible quarterback play, but again, they had that last year and I'm kind of expecting it, is they just don't have any way to create explosives in the pass game. That to me is what I continue to harken back on. And I don't think it's all too crazy to think that's what's going to be the downfall of this group when we look back, you know?
Yeah. And I think one of the things to point back on, and obviously everything we can look back and there's a lot of moves that go along with it. But remember, the Cleveland Browns first draft pick was supposed to be number 44. They dealt that pick to the Houston Texans, who drafted John Metchie III. Obviously, we didn't know at that point in time that he was going to have his diagnosis. That's going to at least keep him out a year and obviously hope he as well. But at the 44th pick, the Browns passed up the opportunity for John Metchie III. And then whoever else was drafted in the second round,
Tyquan Thornton and Alec Pierce. Yes. And like there Sky were good Moore, names there.
Yes, right. Sky so Moore. There are three guys, George Pickens, Alec Pierce and Sky Moore, Steelers, Colts, Chiefs. Have really everything I hear is that they are really impressing people in their camp. And so at 44, now obviously they traded down. I believe that those picks help them get Cade York, possibly as well, Perrion Winfrey. But like we're talking about at the wide receiver position, there were four wide receivers selected at 44 or below in the second round, three of which are possibly going to have a huge impact. And all three of those are AFC teams, right, with the Steelers, Colts, and Chiefs. So, mm-hmm. You know, I do think it's interesting. Obviously, best case scenario would be everybody, you know, Donovan Peoples-Jones is a great number two. Amari Cooper is a number one. David Bell slots in there as a slot receiver. And Anthony Schwartz does some stuff as a deep threat. But there is such an easy picture to go, wow, this could look a lot like last year. Like you said, quarterback play last year wasn't good. Hopefully, at a minimum, Brissett's not turning the ball over as much.
Yeah, it's not hard to pinpoint it. I really don't think it is. I don't think the guards take a step back. There's a world where Nick Harris just can't handle the role, right, at center. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time envisioning him just being so overwhelmed, but it could happen as the starter over a prolonged portion of time. But I think the offensive line, you know, Jack Conklin, again, we're not talking about injury stuff here to avoid things we don't really know, but if Conklin didn't come back to full health, that would be something that would catch everybody off guard. But you know, you need Jed to continue to strive forward. But I think I don't worry about the offensive line so much. I really worried about how their pass catchers perform. I just think that that's going to be everything for where this thing ends up. And like, if you can't, I always love the phrase of you can either have good players or good plays. And I prefer good players. I think the NFL, you know, it makes the margin for error super tight. If as a play caller, if you always have to call the good play, if you call the good play, we got a chance. I call this good play the good time, we got a chance. You need good plays. Good players. You need guys that can overcome wrong scheme, wrong time. A guy who can create something out of thin air. A guy who can go up and make a back shoulder catch. A guy who can create separation on a route that maybe wasn't intended to be open, but finds itself open. And I just worry that that is something that they have sort of glossed over because they thought that this quarterback thing would be a way to solve that. And you know, I get it. You can't fix everything all at once, but it is a situation where I'm just very nervous about being really shorthanded in explosive creation. And again, that was such a big thing. I've always referenced that at times over the last 2 years, it's felt like the Browns have been playing offense in the red zone everywhere. Everything's condensed. Yep. Somebody can't get vertically open. He can't create space because defenses don't respect space creation from this offense. So we'll see if that comes to be the same issue they repeat and how they go about fixing that sort of thing next year. But let's switch over to defense. It's a solid group. They're having a great training camp. I don't think that's any secret. I don't think you need people who are on site to tell you that. You can see it from swallowing up a couple videos that you find online and the real talent of this team, stacking them side by side is it lies with the defense. So if it is not a group that can get better from last year, which it was a solid group, if it doesn't get better and they slip and slide again, They're middle of the pack to below middle of the pack, below average. Where does it go wrong for them in your opinion? And again, it's easy to caveat injuries, but everybody can caveat injuries for every single team as a matter of why things go wrong. So I'm curious if everybody, you know, stays at full strength. This defense is healthy for the most part. What issue do you think is going to end up being something that causes them to be in a frustrating situation? Because last year, a lot of frustrating situations seemed to happen in like third down and long, like the third and fourth downs, they couldn't get off the field. So it just curious, what is the issue there if they have it again?
Yeah, you know, I think everybody can point to the defensive tackle, and I think you're going to probably might hit on that. But the bigger concern for me actually is in at the safety position, not because I don't think there's talent there, but John Johnson III in his role with the Rams was great. And last year he came on in the second half of the season, but he's not a true free safety. Grant Delpit could be, but really is not a true free safety either. Ronnie Harrison, no one really wanted him. He signed a one-year, whatever, million-dollar contract to return to Cleveland. And so while they have some quality players, I do feel like they're, again, for nowadays NFL, right? In 1985, Grant Delpit, John Johnson, Ronnie Harrison, sure, maybe that is a safety room that I think can really do it. I just worry about their lack of that kind of true, really true free safety. I like Delpit a little bit in that role, but I need to see more from him, from an explosive, from a change of direction, going backwards. I need to see more of that to really feel confident. So if the Browns on the back end, right, I think they have great defensive ends. I think they have a great cornerback room. Obviously, like we talked about, health is the most important thing for anybody. But I do worry that without that true free safety, there's a little bit of square peg round hole kind of working. Now, if Delpit, you know, coming with year two off his Achilles, is really able to kind of own that position, great. But I just think it's a little worrisome to not have that in today's NFL with, again, the Joe Burrows. Even Lamar Jackson, while people may not love him as a passer, throws a really good deep ball and has some good timing and anticipation at times, and then the rest of the NFL. So while defensive tackle is weak, again, I'm not sure if that's going to be a significant issue, especially on passing downs. They can move Miles, Jadeveon Clowney, even Alex Wright if they need to. They can move them inside a little bit to kind of create a little bit more pressure from the interior. I'm just,
you know, they didn't do any of that last year. Really was surprised that they didn't do any of it.
It's very, yeah, it didn't make sense. But so for me, it's if it's going to go wrong, right? So, because that's really what we're talking about. It really is at that safety level where you have three guys who want to play forward and may struggle kind of getting deep in some of those areas where they need to be. I think that could cause a lot of problems, especially if we look at the offense. If they're limited making explosive plays and the safety room maybe is not able to withstand some of those deep balls, all of a sudden you're not playing complementary football.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the thing that surprised me was last year they used Grant Delpit a little more in that role than John Johnson. They gave him like 200 slot snaps and there were more fluctuation with how they used Grant. They almost used Grant in a role I thought John would use. Now, there was a nice play of John making a center field interception on a Watson deep ball today. And he did have a nice close to the year, but he's not, his athletic profile doesn't really fit it. He doesn't really fit a deep rangy center field type player. But if they can, I don't know. I mean, I think that's a very fair thing. Like I have a hard time when I look at the Browns group and everybody stays healthy, the defensive ends are going to be really good. They're just too talented. The defensive tackle group, I don't think will be good, but I think it might not matter all too much as long as they do a better job rotating. They did not do a very good job rotating last year. I need those guys to be fresher. Even, I guess, fresh poop players is better than non-fresh poop players, right? to ripe it into a baby diaper analogy, which is what we're dealing with a lot here right now. But if they can keep those guys at least being able to play 100% all go all the time, it can help a little. I think the linebackers, the three that they're going to play the most, JOK, Phillips, and Walker, will be fine. I have a hard time envisioning that. The thing that is interesting to me is kind of it ties into what you're saying. If it goes wrong, if they never figure out nickel, the Greg Newsome experiment, it fails. He's either not good at it or they need him too desperately outside. Greedy cannot handle being consistent. AJ Green, who's being pumped up. And I think AJ Green's a nice player, but again, he's a nice depth player for me right now. Their role is put too far into it because you can't play. You cannot not have three DBs on the field anymore. It's just, that's the fact of the game. It's the base defense these days is nickel. Like I hate that base is called base 4-3 because it's really not. I mean, it's not popular the way it used to be just because offensive football has evolved, all of those things. And so to me, it's a worry. Like I've wanted to see if Sean Jolly, the App State kid, the UDFA could handle it. He's been hurt. I don't think he's going to play Friday. So I'm worried about how they handle that or the success of that role, or if a third safety like, Ronnie Harrison is going to be a box player sometimes and they're going to bump JOK out or whatever route they take. If they, a thing we could look back on to me is, well, they never got good nickel play. And from that issue with nickel play, they can never really consistently get coverage umbrella stuff the way they wanted it to, because nobody plays cover four early downs as much as the Browns. They rely on it. They are the leading team in that regard in the NFL last year. Early down, four defensive linemen, cover four, they were it. So like you have to have the right guys in place to be able to play quarters, especially the way they do with Denzel. So I think they have enough talent between, if you play Greg and Denzel outside, but it's like solving the nickel. And if Greg isn't the answer at nickel, or they don't get as good a play from having Greg outside and somebody more established in the slot, that to me is an area that when we look back on it, it could be a concern. And the safeties couldn't handle the diverse set of responsibilities they have. That is my biggest issue. It's easy to pinpoint defensive tackle, but to me, it just, again, it's like, is it really even going to matter all too much? While I think that this corner situation, especially with the lack of a certain answer at nickel, it's like that to me could be a real backbreaker. And that to me is why you don't get off the field on third down. And that to me is why you don't stop early down run stuff, because you don't have a guy as that nickel who's willing to stick his head into run fits and go crazy and get in there and make a play as he's a C-gap responsibility guy, or he misses a tackle, 5 yards turns into 20. Like that's just how it goes. So I think that we're operating from the lens of looking back on this season that has happened. And hey, I think it could possibly really go wrong here. That part stands out to me too. So I think we're in the same thinking, safety, corner. And if it comes apart, that's where it comes apart. And it's weird to say that they have a ton of talented corners. That to me is like pretty abundantly clear, but you have to have guys who can play roles. Like I like a bunch of talent as much as the next guy, but if you have got a bunch of guys who can do all these things, but they can't really hone in on one thing, you miss it, right? It's like saying, there's an old phrase, right, about if you have two quarterbacks, you actually have none, or, like if you're rotating and you don't have a guy because you haven't had a guy established. So hopefully that is something they can avoid. But to me, it's the most plausible issue at the end of the year, again, outside of injury stuff. So pretty good answer there all around. Special teams, it's the return game. I mean, it could ultimately not matter because D'Ernest Johnson he's proven he can handle kick returns if he's willing to do so. I don't know why he wouldn't be given his situation in the running back room, but if he handled kick returns, I find a guy. I mean, if Anthony Schwartz can't add value as a punt returner, what are we doing? Like he's got to find something here. So I'm actually relatively excited about getting some of these guys, maybe Felton again, maybe DPJ or whoever, punt return opportunities, because Jakeem Grant's not a long-term answer. It's really tough for him to go down with that injury he went down with. It sucks because he was working his butt off and having a nice camp. Again, people are trying to blow that out of proportion, in my opinion, Jared. It's like, oh, what a terrible blow to the Browns. No, okay. I think it's terrible for Jakeem Grant. It's horrible for a guy trying to prolong his NFL career, getting close to the age of 30, but this has no impact on the year. It just doesn't. He was never going to, there's always these things that happen at camp. That's funny every year, Jared. You'll have a guy like Jakeem Grant who's been around the league 5, 6, 7, 8 years. I don't know how many years. I think he's been around like 6 now. He's going against 4-string corners in 1-on-1 drills, and he makes a nice route and catch. It's like, okay, he's done a nice job against the twos. He's done a nice job against the fourth or fifth corner on the roster. That's not how it works. He's not having a great camp. He's not going to be a big part of the offense. He was never going to be a big part of the offense. He was going to be a big part of specials, and that hurts. But in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really hurt that much. Big blow is Myles Garrett. Big blow is Denzel Ward and Nick Chubb or Deshaun Watson. That's a big blow, like what we're talking about right now. But it does change the return game that we were pretty optimistic about. But obviously, to me, everything for Prefer hangs on kicking. I mean, they have to have better punting. They have to have better kicking. And if we look back on the year and Cade York has struggled, because I don't think Bohorquez is going to struggle all too much punting, especially based on what the just weird, terrible punting of the last 2 years. I don't think he's going to be that bad. It's just the kicking. Do you think York has too much pressure? I think when we look back on it, the success of feeling like, well, the specials were pretty good this year, pretty bad. rides on the foot of Cade York, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is whether it's punting, kicking, or even returns, I think it's theory of relativity. Browns fans and Browns media are used to, like, we know the good returners we've had, and we know the good kickers and punters we've had, because there's only a few of them, right? It's, yeah. You know, it's, okay, we're going to talk about Phil Dawson, we're going to talk about Josh Cribbs, right? Gardocki, you know, we'll talk about a couple of them. But in the end, we haven't seen good special teams play in a long time. And so, yeah, I think it is Cade York. Unfortunately, we've seen how players, you know, things can get in their head, especially when there's a lot of pressure on them. He's, you know, a fourth round kicker. Talent at the kicker position is really rarely the issue. It's confidence, it's consistency, you know, it's those kind of things, right? Zane Gonzalez kind of resurrected his career in Arizona, and I believe he's in Carolina now. Austin Seibert almost beat out Evan McPherson last year with Cincinnati. It's all about confidence and consistency. And so, you know, it wouldn't be shocking, because he's a kicker, it wouldn't be shocking if Cade York struggles. What really will be interesting is how long, whether it's this season or beyond, if he does start to struggle, you know, what's the leash on him? Because there's very few Justin Tuckers. There's very few Adam Vinatieri's. Just like in Major League Baseball, there's very few Mariano Rivera's, right? And I've always correlated compared relief pitchers and kickers. They go sour randomly. You don't know why, you don't know how, but all of a sudden, a really good Andrew Miller, the left-hander that was with Cleveland for a while, all of a sudden isn't a very good reliever. And all of a sudden, a kicker who was kicking everything through the goalpost can't do that anymore. And so you're exactly right with Cade. It really will ride and fall on him. The punter should be fine. Return doesn't really, they've tried to really legislate returns out of the game. So shouldn't really be an issue, but it would have been nice to have an explosive return guy that scared people a little bit.
Yeah. I think you're spot on about, like, it's kicker, golfers, and relief pitchers. And I remember, yeah. I always remember Corey Kluber in that playoff game. And there was a playoff game where he's like, he lost his arm slot. And I was like, that's such an interesting thing for a pitcher to say, to lose their arm slot. And that's a similar thing with a golfer losing their, you know, where everything's supposed to be, losing their sequencing. The same thing with kickers. It's sequencing, it's pendulum swing, it's all in the same. So, it's going to be fascinating to track how he's able to handle all that comes with NFL kicking. And like you said, they have almost legislated return game out of it. As long as you catch the football, as long as you especially punt return and get a couple yards back, that's good. I mean, you know, Grant had a touchdown on a return last year. Those are almost more random than anything else these days, getting a punt return for touchdown. Everything kind of has to fall in line. But yeah, special should be better even without Jakeem. And again, it sucks, but I don't think there's a reason to lose a bunch of sleep over all of that. I mean, it's as far as losing sleep, as far as your team winning or losing games, or the bottom line of the Browns being impacted by that. So, but if it does go wrong, it's the kicking situation did not clear up as well as we hoped it would clear up. And Cade was not as good as we thought he would be. And that's kind of the oversimplification of it, but that's what it is.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. So now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't think there's a reason to lose a bunch of sleep over all of that. I mean, it's as far as losing sleep, as far as your team winning or losing games, or the bottom line of the Browns being impacted by that. So, but if it does go wrong, it's the kicking situation did not clear up as well as we hoped it would clear up. And Cade was not as good as we thought he would be. And that's kind of the oversimplification of it, but that's what it is. Let's switch to the last topic as we sign out, which is talking about coaching. The Browns have been in this situation now, and it's rare for them. I think I had tweeted this out weeks ago that this is the first time since Belichick era, I think, that they have had, and this was because Bill was one of the OCs, I think the OC of the situation, but they have not had 3 years of everybody back. And they're in a 3-year nice run here of everybody. I mean, everybody, and a lot of key players too, right? So you're talking about offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, 3 years, play caller, all tied together there, 3 years, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, all back. And, you know, I don't even think I included special teams coordinator in that original tweet that I put out, because it was just like, it's hard enough for me to find OC, DC, and head coach, right? So, they're in a nice spot here, but the question becomes, it seems unrealistic. Let me put it this way. It seems unrealistic to say right now, because it just is far-fetched and there's so much that has happened between last offseason, this offseason, so many moving pieces and all of that. But is there a world where Kevin is on the hot seat, potentially fired at the end of the year? I think that's the thing we have to wonder. If for example, the buzz about Stefanski being one of the leading guys to go after Deshaun, and this Deshaun situation was sold to Jimmy Haslam in one way, and Jimmy Haslam is like, okay, well, now he's done for the year, and I was sold that he wasn't going to miss this year based on this data, whatever, whatever. And I guess it's like that plays into them going 6-11 or 7-10, and it's like Stefanski out of nowhere is fired, AB maybe two, and it's like all of a sudden we sit here, and how many times as Browns fans have we done this? And remember, this is a negative looking ahead and saying what could go wrong. This is a thing that could go wrong. So it turns into, in my opinion, this weird thing where we've always had so many things where they'll pop up on the Twitter timeline and be like, man, this was just a year ago. John Dorsey was here. And this has been a bit, but John Dorsey was just here. And it's like things happen so quickly and you never think they're going to happen that quickly. And then they do. So I guess my question is, do you see a situation where Stefanski finds himself on the hot seat or potentially fired at the end of this year? Or do you think it is just a weird year and they're just going to ride it and just like, we'll run this thing back no matter what happens, because we know we don't have the guy that we thought we would have at that key position?
You know, it's really depressing to even think about. Yeah, but you're good. It's really depressing to think about, right? Like, you know, I'm the guy that's been begging for some kind of consistency, because you can't compete with the Ravens and the Steelers, who have had basically the same version of a front office and a coaching staff for a decade plus now. The New England Patriots, even, who can stay okay, even if they don't have a good quarterback, without consistency. You need players who are fifth round draft picks going into their fourth season, who can step in as starters, maybe not be great, but can step into the same system and be a starter. And that only happens with consistency. But Jimmy Haslam is still the owner of this team. And even when you ask the question about Stefanski, there's that really kind of weird dynamic that when you look back, remember, Stefanski was hired first and was involved in hiring Andrew Berry. So There's also that piece where they seem like they're a package deal, whether they were packaged together before Stefanski was hired. I actually do not think so. There were some other guys, including George Patton, who's now with the Denver Broncos. So I think it's very possible. I think in the end, the biggest thing that would lead Stefanski and then probably Berry out the door really won't have to do with on the field. It'll have to do with in the locker room. Last year, Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham Jr., everything that's involved with that, that's one thing, that's one year, right? And it was a bad season. 2020, they made it all work in a COVID-related year, which all of us gave credit to Stefanski for keeping the team together. Last year was just ugly for a variety of reasons. This year, if there's still locker room issues, right? I don't think Kareem Hunt's issue is locker room. I think it's just a guy trying to get his leverage.
Yeah.
But if there are locker room issues this year, I think that would be what leads to the ouster of Kevin Stefanski. If we start hearing griping about, again, D'Ernest Johnson, Kareem Hunt, the wide receivers, you know, whether it's Brissett or Watson, you know, how the quarterback is being used, the defense griping about how the offense is playing. If we start to hear some locker room stuff, I think that's when you're going to really go, all right, maybe he doesn't have it, whatever it is to lead a locker room. This is his first time and he struggled 2 years straight. We can't really assume he's going to figure that out in year three with the same team.
Yeah, especially the same voice again and again. I think he's the best head coach they've had since the return.
Yeah.
And to your original sentence there, I think it would suck. It would really suck to have thought we had this figured out. Like Stefanski was this guy that we thought, okay, he's young. He's very approachable. He is understanding. He seems to feel the game from a bigger perspective. Like it just, he's even key. Like all those things that we thought were going to lead to long-term success. If they don't, and you said it right, if the locker room's a large part of the fraction point and many other things tie into that, but like, yeah, man, that would be a really depressing time. It would be a really depressing time to have seen a coach that we have seen flashes of players we thought were going to be the right guy, you know, but it's not very often we've seen flashes of the coach that we thought, you know, Pettine gave us a little taste, but this guy won coach of the year, man. Like he won coach of the year and took them to the playoffs, done some things that people haven't done in Cleveland in a long time. And yeah, that'd just be a horrible outcome. So we're going to end a really depressing podcast with that depressing piece of information for you and say that it sucks. And we hope it doesn't come to that, but that's what this show's about is looking at, hey man, you're really excited for the year. And I get that. I am too, but you got to also look at what could go wrong for your team. And I think these are all in the scope of this could go wrong. So we hashed it out. If you have thoughts on this topic and we didn't cover them, I always love to see tweets to either the OBR film breakdown page or myself or hell, tag Jared in this one too. He had a lot of opinions. So
bring it on,
man. We always appreciate the engagement because that's what it's all about at the end of the day. So Jared, appreciate you very much, man. Taking time, short notice as usual. You're the best, bro.
Absolutely, Jake. Anytime for my brother.
All right, man. Thanks, Jared. Thanks to you guys for checking out today's show. We've done our negative podcast. We're going to move on from it, and we're going to be better people from it. And yeah, we always have to do this every year, even though it sucks, and it sucks more this year than it's ever sucked before because of all of the turmoil. And I know we're all so tired of thinking about it, hearing about it, and reading about it and all that stuff. So hopefully this can be a year of unexpected success in a way that would be really cool at the right time when the franchise really needed an underdog story, maybe led by a backup quarterback. That would be a really great thing. So thanks for checking out today's episode, guys. Appreciate you. Have a great Wednesday. We'll have some Jags preview stuff coming up over the next few days, so be sure to tune into that. And then a reminder, Playback, really excited about this thing that's coming up. I'm even going to try to get Jared in the room for the game if he can come by. This is a really cool thing. There is going to be a link in the description of this episode again. Again, the link to get to the room, which will be the same room all year long. You don't have to get a bunch of different links, different games, different links. It's all the same. It'll be in the same room every time. Getplayback.com/room/OBR live. And we will be your Joe Buck, your Troy Aikman, your Tony Romo of the game. I'll be there broadcasting it from my perspective, talking through my thoughts and having on great guests, like I said, such as Jared and many guys from the OBR too. So come by, check that out Friday. Pumped to see you there. We finally get some football this week. We're pumped about that. So forget all the negativity we talked about here. Wash it away. Erase this episode from your downloads and have a fantastic Wednesday, guys. Appreciate you and go Browns.